Beau Bishop on a Saturday. My oldest son, Peyton, God bless him, starts kindergarten on Wednesday. He's just an awesome little dude. Real proud of him. But I tell you that story so I can tell you this story. He's a Carolina Panthers fan. He is because Carolina has great colors and they win and they have Cam Newton. And who wouldn't want to like a team like that? We were at the Pro Football Hall of Fame a couple weeks ago. We go four or five times a year. And he came up to me with a Ben Roethlisberger Steelers jersey. And I said, and it was, you know, it's black and yellow. And I said, buddy, well, we're not doing that. And my wife, Cleveland girl, no, we're not doing that. Get that thing the hell out of here. So, and yes, son, I do owe you a quarter for saying hell. Actually, now I owe you two. So I said, get that out of here. And he goes, well, Dad, I want a number 7. And I said, oh, maybe DeShone Kizer can be that number 7, son. Maybe we can get you into the Browns. And I tell you that story because there is something at least that you can say, and I'm not even talking about Kizer, more so Peppers and certainly Garrett, that you can say, okay, if you're a kid growing up in Northeast Ohio, there is something that you can rally behind. And there's a guy that you can say, that's a cool player who plays for the Browns. And guys, that matters. That matters. It matters in the building of a team, and it matters in your fan base. That stuff carries weight. It also matters when you have Daryl Ryder on because he's plugged in. And he covers this team for a long time, does as good as anybody. Daryl, thanks for the time. I let's start with positives because I'm an optimistic man and I thrive on enthusiasm. And so let's start there. You could tell Thursday, and I know you've talked about it yesterday a lot. You and I talked about it Monday when we were in Berea. You can tell just by looking at Myles Garrett and Jabril Peppers that you have players. And it's been a long time. I don't. It's silly, I suppose, to commend a team for hitting on its first round picks, but that's where we are, right?
That's how low the bar is. So, yes, you have to start somewhere, and it begins with hitting on those early draft picks, and it appears here at the outset, just based on what we've seen through a couple of weeks, that they, in fact, have done that. And so for that, they deserve a little credit for all the criticism that they get, for all the picks that they've missed over the years. I think you got to show them a little love when it looks like they got a couple right.
You're at practice and we were at the scrimmage. I was with you at practice on Monday and you just see Myles Garrett and you say, holy smokes. I mean, that's a big dude, but there's been a lot of big dudes who look the part, who don't play the part. Buddy, he played the part. I mean, he looks like a Joey Bosa, you know, Julius Peppers back in the day. I mean, he looks like just a force that they can hang their hat on for the next 8 to 10 years and say, yeah, we're good at this defensive end spot.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and it's a piece that the Browns have been missing for the better part of 18 years since coming back, you know. Aside from quarterback, they have really been missing that dominant pass rusher that can, you know, not only get after the quarterback, but at least be disruptive in the backfield. And it looks like that's what Myles Garrett is going to be able to bring this football team. We saw it Thursday night in the preseason opener. Certainly, he didn't record a sack in the box score, but he came close to one.
Yeah.
And you also saw him applying the pressure. He had one play. It was really impressive to me where he ran 20-plus yards down the field to chase down a running back who picked up 20-plus yards. So those are things that we've not seen Browns defenders do much of, and we're already seeing that out of Myles Garrett. So very, very positive sign.
Daryl, will the injuries in the secondary, now will we get a real look at Jabril Peppers over the next 10 days before we get to the Giants game?
Yeah, I think so. I think they'll, with Ibrahim Campbell going down with the concussion, I wouldn't expect him back for a week or two. That's usually the timetable. And I'll be honest with you, thankfully that's what it was, because it looked to be a lot serious than just a concussion. And please don't take me saying just a concussion out of context here. I mean, they brought out the cart. They were about to strap him to the board. And then he was able to sit up and walk off under his own power. So that's what I mean, that, you know, they didn't have to cart him off, and, you know, he's not lost for the year. He didn't sustain some sort of very, very serious life-threatening injury, which it had initially appeared to be that way. So that's good news there. But, yeah, and Peppers is, even if he doesn't end up as a starter, we always get caught up, you know, who's starting, and to me, it's not about who's starting, more so it's about, you know, who's on the field in critical positions. That's when you know you got ball players, is when You got guys that are on the field when the game's on the line or teams in the red zone offensively or defensively. And if that player's on the field, that means that they're pretty important here. So we'll get a look at, I think, Jabril Peppers over the next 2 weeks. So he possibly could slide up with the starters in place of Ibrahim Campbell. And, we'll get a look at and see what he's able to do with the ones.
He is Daryl Ryder. He is our excellent Browns beat reporter. And now we're going to talk about DeShone Kizer, my friend. And I'm guessing you've talked about this a lot. It's been the topic. I said off the top of the show that I compared the stats of Brady Quinn in his first few starts, which were really pretty great. 237 yards, three touchdowns, 70-80% completion percentage. I mean, really thrived. But I was at those games. I know you were too. And much of that was check down underneath stuff. And they really bungled Brady from Jump Street and the way they handled him and the coaching changes and everything. No real chance to succeed. Kizer is not a mirage. I mean, we can see the talent. It's a different level of talent. The throws he made for the touchdown, the second one specifically, that's NF. I mean, that's a blitz in your face. That's stepping up and putting it on the money. I mean, that's a big throw. Right. You can tell that this kid has it. To me, it's their fault that they didn't bring somebody else in here to be kind of the bridge to Kizer. They're probably going to try and roll with Osweiler with that. I know that you've said this. There's no point for me, and I said this earlier, there's no point in Kessler getting snaps anymore that are meaningful. To me, it's Osweiler and Kizer from here on out. You develop Kizer and you play Osweiler until it's untenable to play him. How do you think that they should handle the quarterback situation going forward?
Well, I think he was doing a pretty good job, and he used the phrase yesterday in the conference call in talking about it. You know, it's about raising the quarterback, raising or developing a quarterback, and that's what they're trying to do with DeShone Kizer. You know, they're trying to handle him with kid gloves, but also, you know, kick him in the backside too.
Sure.
I think what they ought to do is, at minimum, move him up to number two.
Yes.
Because he's shown that he can beat and play with the 3 and 4s. There's nothing left for him to prove by keeping him the number 3. I need to see, can you compete against better competition? That's the whole point of this right now, Bo. So, need to see him with the 2s. I'm not saying he needs to start against the Giants, although I would not have a problem if they did that. I'd like to see him get elevated and play against even better competition, get some first half or first team reps in that second preseason game so we can see, because he took a massive step from the scrimmage to the first preseason game. Let's be honest about it. The scrimmage, he looked a little overwhelmed.
Yeah.
He certainly didn't look overwhelmed Thursday night in the preseason opener. So now let's graduate him, move him up at least a level and see what he's able to do, because again, I think you're wasting valuable snaps, valuable time if you keep throwing Cody Kessler out there. It's nothing personal against Cody. It's just I don't see the ceiling and the upside in Cody that I see with DeShone Kizer, and that's why, to me, it's paramount that you you test DeShone and see what you can get out of him. And hey, if he's not ready, let's say you start him. Just for the sake of this discussion, let's say he starts against the Giants and does not play well. He struggles. The footballs are off target. The offense is 3 and out. He's dancing in the whatever. Then you know, hey, he's not ready, and we're gonna stick with Brock Osweiler until he is ready. And I don't think that there's anything wrong with that either.
Yeah, I'd almost play them each a half or maybe each a quarter. Osweiler to start, Kizer in the second, Osweiler in the third, Kizer in the fourth. And I just would, they would get them all. That would be my view on it. You brought up Kessler, and he is, I said off the top, and these guys wanted to do negative stuff first and get it out of the way. The 2006 draft class is just complete garbage, isn't it? I mean, it's just, I don't see a thing in it that makes me go, oh, they kind of got that right. Ogba's okay. He's fine. I don't know if Coleman's ever going to be. Boy, I just don't see it with him. I'm sorry, I don't. I don't mean, you know, look, we can talk about the positive things, and I think there's a lot of positives with this team you can hang your hat on. But in 2016, they really blew it, and you can't go back and redo it, but also it puts them a year behind. It puts them a year behind schedule, because if they hit on 2016, you're in a totally different place now, and it's clear to me they didn't. I know they're not going to ever say that publicly, but I think the proof's kind of in the pudding, don't you?
Yeah, it's tough because, and I'm not making excuses for him, but this group was together for 3 months, and all of a sudden they've got to, make 14 picks in the draft. Corey Coleman's a question mark. Agba, as you said, maybe there's something there. Carl Nassib, there might be a little something there, but he's got some development to go. Sean Coleman might end up being your starting right tackle this year. He's a third-round pick. Joe Schobert, you might have a little something there.
I like him.
So maybe.
I like him.
Ricardo Lewis is flashing a little bit here in training camp, so maybe you have something there. Seth DeValve, again, maybe you have something there. Jordan Payton, question mark. Spencer Drango, question mark. Rashard Higgins, I think, is a question mark. So you have a lot of maybes and a lot of question marks entering year two of a draft class. And while I'm not ready to completely abandon all hope from the class of 2016, I'm also pretty realistic. Need to see a little bit more than what we're seeing from that particular class. However, when you look at this year's class,
there you go.
Yep. And especially at the top end, you can see the difference.
There is.
Because, guys are already flashing. So I'm not ready to indict the front office just yet as far as not doing a quality job. While I would like to see a little more out of the class of 2016, I'm willing to give them this year and next year. 3 years you got to give them before you're ready to bail on a guy. That's why I'm ready to bail on Cam Irving, because this is, the season three for him, and he looks the same that he's been.
Isn't that something, Daryl? I don't mean to interrupt you.
Yeah.
Well, I guess I do mean to interrupt you, because, Cam Irving was I guess I just did it. But, this was a kid who looked like, this is a kid who played everything at Florida State. They loved him.
Yeah.
He was a consensus All-American. He was somebody who seemed like a can't miss. What is it with him? Is it to me, it just looks like physically he's not there.
Yeah, well, I think he's too big. And I know that's kind of hard to say about an offensive lineman, that a guy is too big, but I really think that he is. And the reason I say that is because he's so big that when he comes out of his stance, defensive linemen are already able to have that leverage
they
on
do.
Him.
They do. You're right.
I think he's like 6'5", 6'6", okay? So he loses the leverage game right away. The other thing, too, is he's a little slow. He's either too fast, okay, which gets him a flag for a false start, or he's too slow off the initial snap, and that's a problem. The other thing, too, is the focus-type penalties, the false starts and stuff like that. To me, that comes down to focus and attention to detail. I can't gripe too much about holding penalties, even though he gets a ton of them, because if he ain't holding, he ain't trying, darn it. That's what the good coaches will tell you,
Right.
But he's just got to do it where you don't get caught. You got to learn how to hold without getting caught, son. But when you're 6'5 and almost, 225 pounds, you're hard to miss.
it's really shocking. I followed him in college.
It's unfortunate. Yeah, it's unfortunate. I hate to pick on the kid, but no matter where they put him, they've tried him at guard, it didn't work. They tried him at center, it didn't work. Now they're trying him at tackle, and it doesn't work. I think at some point you have to say, son, you don't have it. You had a great college career, but I don't think it's going to work out in the National Football League. Here's what's left on your rookie contract, and, have a wonderful life.
And he will. He's been paid handsomely, so he will. Daryl, I appreciate
your time
and your expertise, my friend, as always. Thank you, sir.
You got it, Bo. Talk to you soon.
All right, that's Daryl Ryder, our excellent Browns beat reporter.